Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's cast, Never a Clock, Chapter 1. The questions this cast answers are, what topics will Manager Tools never address? Why don't you teach how to manage millennials? And how are women different than men in the workplace? If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening.
Due to COVID, the people of Prague have been waiting for an entire year to get their management and communication training. We're excited to be finally coming to Prague in September. It's our only European conference this year, and Prague's an amazing city. So if you're not in Prague, why not make a week of it and have some vacation either side of your management training? And if you're a team of more than 15, email us and see if Sarah can come to you while she's in Europe. She can bring our effective manager, effective communicator, or effective hiring manager to your team on your site and tailored to your organization. To find out more, email us at customerservice@manager-tools.com.
So Kate, reading this podcast, I thought to myself, this is fun. This is an exciting one. This is going to be a good one this week.
That's funny because I kind of thought to myself, it could appear from the beginning, like it could appear from what the questions are. It doesn't appear from the title, but it appears from like the questions that it's touchy.
And touchy.
Yeah. So I was actually like, oh man, this is an interesting one.
But feisty one.
Yeah. I thought to myself, this is a little, it skews towards Dark Mark a little bit if he was here.
It does.
Like I got a little like Dark Mark reminiscent when I was reading it.
I know. Exactly. Well, I'm sure that we'll do our part to be as Dark Mark as possible. So today, we're going to be talking about a lot of really terrible internet guidance that exists out there about management. Unfortunately, There's some really bad ideas about management and the organizational workplace that are on the internet. And what that means is because people are giving management and career guidance about some pretty bad things, that we also get asked a lot about our guidance for these societally popular concepts. And a lot of people get upset with us. I mean, we're pretty sure that some folks don't listen to us because of our stance on a lot of topics, aka Dark Mark. But the thing about it is, and lucky for our listeners, we don't recommend how to do something that we not recommend you do. No matter how popular it might be, how many internet articles there might be about some new topic, if we don't agree, we're not going to give you guidance on it.
Yeah, we're not going to tell you or make recommendations about how to do things that we don't think that you should be doing. Mm-hmm. And this cast covers those things. So specifically today, because as you mentioned, there's a universe of bad guidance out there, we're going to talk about four things. We're going to talk about how to manage women, millennials, different races, and internationally, based on international differences. This is one of those ones where I feel like the title doesn't do justice to what
just
it is that we're going to...
how quickly it is.
Yeah, just, you know. And ironically, we're going to start with how to manage women.
I know. I love that.
Yeah, it's like, it's really fun. It's really... this one's, I think, particularly fun for us.
Yeah.
As women who aren't managed. And what's great about it is that there are a lot more women professionals in the world today than there were 50 years ago, which is great.
Which is wonderful.
And we're super excited about that. And part of that is just because women are equally as productive as men.
Yeah. So why Start wouldn't there. They be?
Yeah. Put that in your minds. Women are equally as productive as men. As well, freedom in most of the world makes it possible for women to choose what they want to do. So now, you know, with more opportunities, there are more women in the workforce. And we love that, of course, because more productivity makes for a better world, you know, because of the capitalistic nature of most economies and locations in the world which are involved in productive work. But because women and men are different. And I say that with, imagine me saying it like italicized or like, maybe not
italicized, but like, this light slant on it.
Yeah. With quotation marks around it. There's a lot of guidance in the world today about how to manage women and men differently. And it's all terribly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's all
accurate.
Really bad. Really bad.
Really bad. So for the purposes of our cast, we're just going to start with, I want to say, a little bit of level setting, because this concept is going to apply to all of the topics that we address. So we're going to make the next point once, because it's going to cover us for all of the Never a Clock guidance. It's going to save some time.
Right.
Now, the thing about the internet, the reason that there is this wealth of wrong-headed guidance about women and men needing to be managed differently is largely due to the low barrier of entry for widespread information, thanks to the wonders of the internet. Back before there were large numbers of women spread throughout organizations, there was much less appetite, very little interest in studying men and women and their differences in the workplace. And when the research was done, the studies were often built on biased assumptions and mistaken value judgments that we now know today are terribly wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Those basic mistakes, though, in the scientific method essentially skewed the data that showed men did better in positions of greater responsibility than women. The world was a different place. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness that's over.
Yeah.
And here we are.
And now there's all this information available for free on the internet about women in the workplace. And I mean, honestly, the problem with that is that it's on the internet.
Yeah.
And the barrier for entry to the internet is zero.
Mm-hmm.
So the kind of work that needs to be done to truly get to the issue around sex differences in the workplace would require significant analysis and just way more work than the majority of people on the internet are putting in. And one really kind of interesting example to me is I use Pinterest often, and I use it with other people. Like, we have shared, you know, like idea boards and things like that. And so I see a lot of things on Pinterest. And one of the things I've been seeing lately is videos about like careers and resumes and stuff like that. And y'all, if you're on Pinterest and you're watching a video from TikTok about careers, you've gone too far. Like, you're too far down the rabbit hole. Another really great example of the stupidity of internet popularized professional guidance are videos about how to seed an how to succeed in interviewing on YouTube. There's a lot of those. And, you know, Wendy and Mark watched hundreds of these videos and were honestly shocked at how bad the guidance was. They told us it was just appalling. I think the classic was the guidance around how to answer the tell me about yourself question, which is a, you know, standard interview question. And what they really learned was that the guidance on YouTube about how to answer the tell me about yourself question had nothing to do with the answer to
the
question. Something like two-thirds of the talent, again,
quotation
air quote, in the videos had never interviewed anybody, at least based on what we could see on their resume. I mean, just no experience with interviewing. And suspiciously, all the videos were about the same length. And all those videos were about 10 minutes long, which there's a reason for that.
There is, to follow the idea through, if you're not familiar with it. The videos are 10 minutes long because that's how long a video on YouTube must be to qualify for the YouTube algorithm, which inserts three advertisements into the video itself. So I guess what I'm basically saying here is you don't have to know, one thing about actually answering, tell me about yourself, to put up a video giving people a recommendation
and most
on how to answer it. Exactly. And to give people a recommendation on how to answer that, the people in those videos don't care. They don't give one flip about who's watching it, and what's in their brain isn't, how do I help this person get their next career? All they care about is making money because they captured your eyeballs and they can advertise to you and therefore receive money in advertising dollars due to that.
Yeah, from an advertiser who also doesn't care what you're watching or if you're going to get another job.
Or how to help you.
We have a whole podcast about this, which is called Don't Get Tell Me About Yourself Advice from YouTube. Mm-hmm. So if you want to go and listen to that cast, you can do so. Although I would argue that in the case of that specific cast, the title is exactly what you need to know.
Yeah.
And that you can mine the
bluff.
BLUF, colon, bottom line up front. So to circle back, okay, so we've made the argument that the vast majority of information on the internet is not going to be useful for you and doesn't give us any information about how to effectively manage women versus men. And when it comes to women and men in the workplace, you're going to find this silly guidance out there. I mean, you just are. It's out there. Some of the internet sites, not always video, not always YouTube or Pinterest or TikTok or whatever, they start with broad assumptions about male and female workplace differences that are false, which are commonly held.
Yeah.
So we hear the guidance or we read it and we feel good about what we're hearing or reading. And so we assume that the guidance that they offer is legitimate.
Exactly. And
that's not accurate, right? Some of these assumptions, I mean, what kind of assumptions? This is like my favorite part about
all
this.
Of these. I love them.
Yeah. Because, okay, so what are the assumptions? First, women are more nurturing than men.
Mm-hmm.
That's not so, according to standard behavioral models. And I wouldn't assign that to myself. Yeah,
I know.
I wouldn't
I
say we've got two people, you know, on this cast who are maybe less nurturing than.
Yeah. I mean, I'm getting ready for the podcast today. My cat was beside me. I'm like, get out of here.
No, that's
how much I love her. We don't need you for this.
Yeah, I put my dog in a cage for this. So,
like, I love her.
Yeah.
But also, there's a time and a place for that.
Yeah. It's just not true, y'all, that women are more nurturing than men. Women and men respond roughly equally across the spectrum of caring about people versus being more analytical when you look at standard behavioral models. So,
Absolutely. Another one, women are less assertive than men. I know, exactly. I mean, experientially, we're just blowing things out of the water here. Not accurate in this room right now, and not so according to the workplace behavioral analyses, once role power is factored into the analysis.
Yeah, absolutely. And coming from a, you know, again, my own experience, I spend roughly half of my life interrupting people. So there you go. Also, they say these assumptions state that men are more decisive than women, which is not so at all, according to standard definitions of decisiveness. And again, not so for the people recording this cast.
Right. And I mean, the problem with guidance like this, these misguided assumptions that people who are not women are hearing about or learning about or thinking about women, you'd be sorely mistaken if you put Kate or I on a project or another woman who was very similar to us, and many of them are, if you thought, oh, great, she's going to be the nurturing presence. She's going to be really reserved. She's going to be less decisive in her decision-making. That's what happens when people try and understand about how someone else thinks, feels, makes decisions, the way they operate in the workplace. You hear those things, right? You hear, oh, women are more nurturing. That makes sense. Actually, yeah, I know a lot of women who are nurturing. But we're all different.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
It's unjust to the person to make assumptions about them based on their group.
Absolutely.
And especially given that gender is such a large group.
Oh, large.
It's just such a big group. Like the idea that one person's experience or their predilections based on their group would be, you know, X or Y, and just being able to like, mostly it's this. It's like, guys, those are bad assumptions. It's just not respectful of the person either.
At all.
And even from a more kind of broad or professional outlook on this, women and men are equally capable of virtually all professional jobs. You know, we have to say virtually because there are some differences between men and women, but they're largely related to physical differences, which don't matter significantly for the vast majority of professional roles.
Mm-hmm.
And Manager Tools is 100% behind more women becoming more powerful in the workplace.
Absolutely.
In terms of role power, especially because that's what the data suggests would be most effective.
Right.
Ha! And that's because it's behavior and not sex differences that drive organizational performance.
Exactly. I mean, we're 50% of the population. We should, you know, have a 50% representation.
Just be great
at higher levels in organizations. You know, I mean, it makes sense. Now, there's another factor worth noting that applies to all of our other Never a Clock guidance as well. Managing men and women based on their gender differences is managing based on not an individual capability and performance decision, but rather based on a person's group identity. And there's no evidence that any group identity limits or advantages any group. So there's no legitimate reason for a manager to try and manage an individual person based on their gender. And guys, we're not saying here that bias doesn't exist.
Correct.
We're further supporting just how wrong-headed and nonsensical bias is. There's no effective reason for it. It doesn't help us make better decisions about the person we're communicating to or with. It gets in the way. And that's the problem with this kind of guidance that's out there. It's like adding more bias to the puzzle,
mm-hmm.
only further confusing the situation by putting out into the world misleading information.
And management and organizational performance is based on individual performance.
Mm-hmm.
So we manage individuals, irrespective of their sex or gender. We've covered this extensively, actually, sharing our significant data in another cast, the Manager Tools data on race and gender. So if you want to go there and listen to the data.
It's a good one.
It is. It is. And not that it matters, nor is it data. But over 50% of Manager Tools employees and 2/3 of our presenters are female. And the professionals running our two biggest product lines, Sarah and I, are 100% women.
We are.
Mm-hmm.
We absolutely are. And we're doing all right.
Listen, you may be a new listener.
Oh, yeah.
And if you are and you think that the reason Sarah and I are giving this guidance is because we are two women, no, it just happens to be that conveniently we're two women. And it's not us, you know, saying things about companies that we wish other people would do either. It's something that we do here.
Exactly.
We are the shining example of, hey, girls are good at their jobs too.
Girls are great at their jobs too. So when are we going to give guidance about managing women differently? Never a clock is when we're going to give that guidance.
What's the worst mistake you can make as a manager? It probably can't be quantified, but up there in the top three, I think, is hiring. Hiring the wrong person is just misery for years. Instead, use our interview creation tool to create the right interview and ask the right questions. We even give you the right answers so that you know what to look for. You'll need a personal license, so go to the website, manager-tools.com, look for products, and in the dropdown, look for personal license. We want to spare you the misery, and we created a tool just to do that.
All right. Next topic, millennials. I love the millennial topic.
I do too. So fun.
It's another one of those ones. It's like, ooh, millennials. There is an entire industry that is very successfully, I might add, recommending that companies manage millennials differently than anyone else on their workforce. Now, for the record, we include Gen Z members in the discussion because they're stupidly lumped into marketing efforts of these firms trying to sell guidance to bigger firms. Now, if that didn't sound hilarious when I said it out loud, it should be. It's basically comparable to lumping men and women in the same group and then suggesting you're trying to teach a company about how to better manage women. I mean, it goes against the whole purpose. I mean, you're either helping us manage millennials or more than millennials, but you're definitely lumping people together.
Yeah.
It's basically like admitting that what they're saying doesn't make sense.
And here's the point. There's no serious evidence that millennials are any different than anybody else in the workplace.
No.
The vast majority of what you hear or read about millennials is completely tendentious and arguably wickedly so.
Yeah.
Say
we're
wicked.
Not very nice about it.
Yeah. And I say wicked because professionals selling guidance to major organizations ought to have more data to support their claims than the millennial industry does.
Exactly.
You should have some data, some...
You should have some.
Research.
Just an example. Like, yeah, some research. Tell me a statistician was called at some point in time. All right, so some great examples of never a clock stupidity when it comes to millennials. The very first hit we found on managing millennials cited these differences. They want opportunities for learning and development.
Aww.
Right? But you're like, you think to yourself, that's legit. You're like, yeah, actually, come to think of it, I've found that to be true. Millennials do want us to focus on their learning and development. That's true because everyone wants us to focus on their learning and development, for heaven's sake. All of the people.
Yeah, are we genuinely saying that someone who's 45 doesn't want opportunities for learning and development?
Done learning.
Done.
I'm capped.
They're out.
I'm capped. Stagnant. This is where I just ride it out for the rest of the career. No more learning.
I hope that's not true because we are in a tight spot if people...
Yeah, manager tools.
If it tops out at the top of the millennial generation, manager tools out of business.
Well, you know, I would almost suggest this is experiential data. That's not true because I don't know, Kate, what would you say in terms of our conferences, the people that we teach, the effective manager, effective communicator, effective hiring manager, effective remote manager? If I had to guess, I think that the average age of individuals in that room, I'm going to say 45. And now I've only in the last 7 years, I think I calculated this recently, trained about 5,000 people. So, I mean, it's a smallish sample size, but Kate's got about, let's call it 5,000 in her pile. So
yeah.
It's 10,000 people. And the average age is 45. I mean, I think that us old timers still want to learn stuff. That's all.
I hope so. Mm-hmm. Also, let's look at it another way, right? Rather than comparing 30-year-olds of today to 50-year-olds of today, let's ask the question. Do you believe that 25 years ago, young professionals, which is what we're talking about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want learning and development?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yes. Somehow the human condition has evolved. The people of today are so more further evolved than those 50-year-olds that they now want learning and development, but they're really just the ones that invented it.
Sure, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
That's
good.
The weirdest practicing of some sort of weird ageism that exists on the planet. Come on. Of course, all of the people wanted learning and development when they were young, especially when they were young in their career.
I mean,
you're new to the workplace. You want to gain access to new ideas. You want to increase your skill set.
Yep.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Another kind of thing that this top hit Google search said is that companies should offer a balance between professional and personal life. Okay. Any reasonably intelligent people out there believe that 25-year-olds want that, but 40-year-olds don't?
Mm-hmm. I hate work-life balance.
Yeah, it's the worst.
It's the worst.
And I think this will resonate with a lot of people. There's ample evidence over the past 30 years that work-life balance, which is a really dumb concept, by the way, because you can't balance those two things, doesn't really begin to become a key factor for employees until they reach their 30s, at which time people start to have kids, they start to have more time commitments at home, and suddenly they need a different skew on how much time they spend at work and how much time they spend at home. It has nothing to do with what generational cohort they're in, and it never has. It has everything to do with those phases in our life that affect how we spend our time.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this top hit, this Google hit goes on and on with similar tidbits, all of which any discerning reader could discredit quickly if you're thinking about through the things that we just presented in terms of does this not apply to the other people in different age groups? Or is this maybe simply a phase in life that would cause people to, you know, think differently about their work choices?
Exactly. Not only that, though, it gets better. Probably the most well-regarded management guidance organization in the world. So here we're tipping the MT cap to them. The Center for Creative Leadership wrote an entire book about what millennials want from work. And that book completely supports our position.
Yep.
People who are out there that call them snake oil salespeople, trying to push on us and have us believe in this millennial differences concept that we're debunking and truly isn't accurate, should hang their heads in shame. Attributing these types of ideas or wants to someone's generation is something that works for a company because it's super easy to repackage.
Mm-hmm.
The thing about these silly ideas, which you already mentioned, Kate, we'd already talked about the fact that all of those things apply to people who are really young in their career. What that means is in the next generation, they can spew the same wrong ideas wrapped in different packaging. And then again, in the next generation, repackage those terrible ideas and sell them again. Because this is about where someone is in their life, the stage of their evolution through the workplace, not their generation, like we're told it is.
Mark's personal favorite and one of my favorite ways of debunking generational management differences comes from reading these specific tidbits, which are they reached puberty earlier, they have less respect for authority, they have less alignment with social institutions, and they want more work-life balance again. And if you heard these and you thought, I do think that applies
that
to millennials.
Right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, all of these attributes, if you're thinking of millennials and Gen Zers, are actually from the Wikipedia page for the baby boom generation, which ended in 1964.
Mm-hmm.
So
there's that.
There's that. Listen, y'all, since the beginning of time, 40-year-olds have forgotten how little they knew when they were 20.
Oh, totally.
This is simply a case of us versus them. You know, kids these days.
Oh, they're the worst.
They're the worst. And, you know, it always strikes me. There's two things that it seems like every generation has said. The first is kids these days. And the second one is everything is terrible and it's only getting worse. And y'all, the idea of generational cohorts only started with the baby boomer industry. And that's why I think, too, the two generations you really hear the most about are baby boomers and millennials.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear a lot about like Gen Z and all that stuff.
Yeah, the people in between. Yeah, no one talks about them.
Yeah. Even though they're there, there's not enough of a gap for us to say, oh, this group wants something different, right? And that gap, y'all, is a phase thing rather than these people are suddenly new and fresh and different.
Exactly. So I guess to answer the question, when are we going to teach millennial management? Never a clock. We're going to recommend instead you manage the individual, not the group they're in. Oh, that takes us into the next one, how to manage different races. Now, if you haven't caught on to the theme yet, which I'm sure you have, this first chapter of Never a Clock is built around the fundamental management principle that effective managers manage individuals as opposed to any of the groups that they belong to. So far, we talked about women, we've talked about generations, and it includes an employee's race. We've previously published much of our guidance, actually, and Kate mentioned this podcast a bit earlier. It shares the manager tools data on race and gender. Mm-hmm. And that's got tons of additional information in it.
And it really does, what I think the most important thing to take from that cast is there's not only no evidence that managers of a certain race are better or worse managers than any other race, The evidence shows that managers of all races are equally effective.
Yeah.
And why would race be a factor if capabilities and behaviors are available to all managers? They wouldn't be.
Yeah. To all the people. Mm-hmm.
We have ample evidence shared in our cast that any race of manager can manage directs of any other race equally well. Mm-hmm. It's not only that there's no evidence that race makes a difference, there is evidence that it actually makes no difference.
Exactly. And of course, for the 100th time, we don't recommend managing people based on the group they're in, nor do we recommend you acquiesce to an employee asking or demanding to be managed in a certain way based on their race or gender or generation. We manage people in the style that we know works for people.
Yeah, and identity doesn't determine behaviors and therefore doesn't determine performance.
Exactly.
So we manage based on the individual. And think of it this way. Imagine your boss said, hey, listen, I've had extensive experience managing people of your different race. So I think I'll be able to be a good manager of you because I'll manage you just like I managed all those other people that were of your race.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all, that's bigotry.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine how you'd react if somebody said that to you? I mean,
no, I would be so sad.
So sad. If you reacted impolitely, I don't blame you. Because that's not all right to say. And let me be clear, if you like that idea, if that seems to make sense to you, please don't tell people that you listen to our podcasts. We'd rather others not know that you listen to manager tools. That's bigotry.
Yeah, this is another one of those, like, if you don't like this idea, this podcast isn't for you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when are we going to recommend race-based management?
Never a clock.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Never. Which is akin to our final question, which is how to manage internationally.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of, I think, ideas out there about different nationalities. Italians gesture more. Probably heard that. It's totally false. Americans are more direct.
Mm-hmm.
False too. Japanese are more respectful of their elders. Not so.
No. Unless
you believe that on a 1 to 7 scale, a difference of 5.7 versus 5.9 between Americans and Japanese is usable in your professional life.
Right. To be clear, that difference is significant scientifically.
Sure.
The thing about it, though, is it's impossible to discern that difference and make it usable and useful in normal daily interaction.
Agreed.
I mean, that makes no difference in your life whatsoever. So it might as well not exist for all intents and purposes in this case.
It gets to the heart of the matter, which is that while there are slight differences between national and regional cultures, the graphical representation of those differences
mm-hmm.
is equivalent to basically two bell curves, very slightly separated by the slimmest of margins.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important because any data scientist will tell you that the chances are much greater that the difference between two Americans relative to their elders are larger than the difference between the average Japanese and the average American.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of this is like stuff that resonates that's not true, but I think if you hear that, you can imagine that being true. And in fact, that's one where the data proves out that it is more likely to be true. And we do have a cast on this too called the Wendy Curve, which is a great cast named for one of our favorite people.
Mm-hmm. And that example that we're talking about can be particularly, I want to say embarrassing, yeah. That example of group identity, when we mistakenly, based on, again, all of these false assumptions that are banging around in our brains, manage someone who looks Asian as though they're someone from Asia. Now, let me go a little bit deeper here. That's to say nothing of the common wisdom of the differences between the subcultures among Asians. I mean, we're already making this massive stretch by lumping everyone on the Asian continent together, which is a big problem. And then we only to discover that the individual we're managing and we were trying to manage in a way that we felt was respectful to their Asian culture was born and raised in France or Egypt or anywhere else on the planet for that matter. And now here we are managing people just based on how they look. Oof. And at this point, yeah, exactly. We're stepping into some very dark waters and we might as well go back to managing people differently based on sex at this point.
Yeah.
Because none of this is helpful.
It's not. And international management is just management. There's actually, again, more differences in performance between an American company versus an American governmental agency than there would be between an Australian corporation and an Israeli corporation, according to the data. And so when are we going to teach how to manage people from different countries differently? Never a clock.
Never a clock. So I guess to sum it all up, we're basically recommending here, you don't believe the popular media. Managing is never about someone's group identity. I think it's prideful. It's wonderful that we want to understand more about other people. And so we seek to learn that information.
Yes.
Because we want to remove those biases and we want to be more aware and we want to understand how other people think and the situation that they've gone through. But the problem is the source we're going to is one in which anybody can throw something up. It's completely free. I mean, I think I heard a statistic once. Do not quote me on this. That in terms of the news on the internet, there is 7 times more false information than there is accurate information. And I mean, the same could be, Dory, we're going to stretch that false data point because I don't really know that that's true, but the same is true of recommendations. The same is true of suggesting to you that this is how you should manage someone. That's not true. It's about individual performance. We recommend that you manage the individual irrespective of the group which they belong to. People are individuals. Treat them that way. Performance is available, thankfully, to us all.
Awesome. Thanks, Sarah.
Awesome. You're welcome. Thank you, Kate. Thanks, everyone. That's all for this week. Have a good one.